This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. I'm Roshan Kanesan, and welcome to Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. And speaking about headlines, last week we saw the EPF, or the Employee Provident Fund, announce a restructuring to its members' accounts with key changes, including one, that members' accounts will be restructured from their current two-account system to a three-account system. And there's a rebranding going on as well, no longer known as Account 1 and 2. Account 1 will now be known as Account Persaraan. Account 2 will be known as Account Sejahtera. And the newly introduced Account 3, formerly known as what would have been Account 3 in the past life, is now known as Account Flexible. So as the name suggests, Account Persaraan will focus on accumulating retirement savings. Account Sejahtera will be focused on members' life cycles needed during retirement. And Account 3, Account Flexible, will provide flexibility for short-term financial needs, and savings can be withdrawn as needed. And I think, as many people have said since the announcement, it's really, really, really important that you only use this for emergencies. Now, we have seen the restructuring. What you can basically see is account two has been broken up into two particular areas. So you can focus on one part of it on property and medical and things that we're used to. Account three is a little bit more flexible, as the name implies. Now, allocations of contributions starting from 11th of May, that is next week, contributions will be allocated 75% will go into account Persaraan, 15% will go into account Sejahtera, and 10% into account Flexible. Now, there is a transfer option in play from between 11th of May to the 31st of August. If members want to transfer part of their savings from account Sejahtera to account Flexible as an initial amount into account Flexible, basically, if you've never withdrawn money from your EPF accounts between now until the 31st of August, you can restructure it so that in the entire fund looks like a 75-15-10 proportion. And it's a bit nuanced and complicated. Look up the EPF FAQ for more on how that works. If no transfer is chosen, if you don't opt in for this, your existing balance will remain as account 1 and 2 will become account Sejahtera and account Persaraan. And members can fully access the new system starting 12th May. Now, today I'm speaking with economist Dr. Jeffrey Williams to dissect what this means and the potential economic and retirement implications, among other things. Dr. Jeffrey, welcome to the show. It's been a while. Thank you for coming in.
The pleasure, always pleasure.
Now, as mentioned, EPF will be changing their account structure. So account one becomes Persaraan, account two becomes Sejahtera, and a new account three, which will be account Flexible. To say the least, there have been some mixed feelings about this. Some commentators have come out and hammered it. Some people have said it's personal responsibility. It's, you know, right of the individual. It gives them options. What are your overall top line thoughts on this?
I think there are different perspectives on it. But I think fundamentally what EPF are doing is trying to change the whole perception of what the EPF is all about. And they're restructuring not just the three accounts, but they're also offering a whole range of other products for different types of people, gig economy people, housewives, and so on. And this is all part of a new strategy from EPF, which is trying to help people to look for sustainable retirement incomes. Rather than in the past where EPF was just a savings scheme, then mm-hmm. you get a lump sum, and then within a year or two, you've spent it. And then you're finished, right? So what they're trying to do is to help people to understand that actually the EPF is a much more sophisticated, multi-product offering now that we didn't have before, and to offer people much more flexibility. And I think my initial view of this was that, yes, we should be encouraging people to save in the long term, of course. But then when I've looked at it, I think actually this does that, particularly because it increases the percentage of your savings in account one. And that's protected. It's not to be taken away. And the squeeze is in the other two accounts.
Yeah. So I think what seems to have been lost in a lot of the discussion has been the fact that what was known as account one before this has gone from 70% to 75%. So effectively raising up the compulsory retirement amount. And then what was account two has been reduced down to 25% and then broken down into 15% into what we usually would be able to use and 10% into a more flexible option. How material do you think of a move do you think this is in relations to long-term retirement and pension reform?
I think it will. It is actually much more significant than perhaps people think. Because actually, previously, when you had 70% in account one and 30% in account two, the truth of it is that by the end of people's working life, most of that 30% in account two had been withdrawn. And so people were really only left with 70% of their savings. And what's going to happen now, of course, is, yes, there is greater flexibility in account three for withdrawals. But in the end, you're going to save more because in the end, you're going to retain 75% of your account. And that's a better outcome overall. Generally speaking, you would say that, you know, the way that you deal with your pension is you save more or you work longer. Both are not particularly attractive options, I have to say. But in this case, what EPF are saying is you save the same because they're not increasing the contributions from your salary. So you're saving the same, but you're retaining more. And so by the end of your working life, you will only have been able to withdraw 25%. Not 30% as was before.
Yeah, and I think it's important to recognize that the EPF members are not a monolith. Not everyone is the same. And if you look at the median savings, it is quite worlds apart, right, between the yes. T20s, the M40s, and the B40s, quote-unquote. I'm not particularly favorable of that kind of distribution. But in terms of the haves and the have-nots here, so the people who have more savings tend to use their account tools for medical, for property, for children's education. And then those who don't have different priorities and maybe have withdrawn it. So the averages really do tell quite an interesting story.
They're really important. And I think what's also really useful and very, very helpful is through the whole of this lockdown period and all of these lockdown withdrawals, EPF have been hugely transparent in telling us all about this data and telling us that, you know, their coverage of their scheme is more than 16 million people. But then when you look at the number of people there who have significant amounts in their accounts. It's only about half of the people who are active members. And then those who have adequate savings is only about 23%. And so they're really telling us, look, it's not, it's like you said, a lot of people in the scheme, and every one of them has an individual story which reflects their needs in terms of their retirements.
And the only one who has true visibility of all that behavior is really the EPF. I'm not saying, again, that they're yes. infallible or anything like that. Criticism and feedback should be provided, should be given, because people are worried about people withdrawing, right? And there are certain perspectives we can get into that later. But I just pulled up the EPF dividend appendix, and this shows you kind of like the state of the EPF member today. EPF has a total, as of end of 2023, total members 16 million, active 8.5 million, and new registration of 460,000. Now, that's one thing. But if you look at the averages and the medians, it really paints such an interesting story. If you break down the average savings, so the average for savings for Bumiputras is 38,000 ringgit, for Chinese members, 440,000 ringgit, Indian members, 67,000 ringgit, and other races, 21,000. That's average savings in their EPF as a whole, with the total average being 67,000. But if you look at median savings for ages below 55, it's 12,000 ringgit.
Yes.
That's an appalling number. That means half of members have less than 12,000 ringgit.
Yes, and if you're expecting to be 20 years in retirement from 55 to the life expectancy 75, it's something like 20 ringgit a month or something like that, isn't it? So these are the type of calculations.
Yeah.
And as you can see, all of this is in the public domain, and EPF are being very, very transparent. Mm. And they're really trying to encourage people to understand that these are the realities of life. And actually, when you retire, you are likely to retire with very little, if anything at all, in your account. That's why it's very important for you to be continuously saving. And that's why it's very important, like you said, although you have access now to the new account three, it's only for emergencies. Because if you start withdrawing too much of that, you have to rebuild that.
Yeah.
And if you're in your 40s or if you're in your 50s, it's going to be very much harder for you to get to what they call the pension adequacy level.
Yeah. And there is an income issue as well, right? There's only so much EPF can do. But just one more number I do want to get into is the savings by so-called level group, right? B40, M40 and T20. 900 million of the 1.1 trillion ringgit in assets is belongs to 3.2 million members, the T20, mm-hmm. so-called T20. M40 is 180 billion, and then the B40 has 11 billion. So again, when we're talking about who's going to be impacted by this restructuring, it really is more the people with the haves, the M40s, 6.4 million of them, and the T20s with of 3.2 million of them, they have 80-90% of the assets. So again, we need to be very, I think, specific in terms of who we're talking about, in terms of who gets impacted.
And I think it's also very important to understand that the EPF is the anchor financial institution of the economy as a whole, across all major forms of investing. But EPF can only help its members. Mm-hmm. And there are 16 million members, but there are 23 million adults.
Yeah.
And that means that 7 million people are not within the EPF
one
scheme.
One-third of the working population.
One-third, yes. And of those who are in the EPF scheme, nearly half of them are not active. And as you've just pointed out, most of that money is within the very small group of people. So EPF definitely is the anchor for the system, but EPF is not the solution to the pensions crisis. That's really important to emphasize.
It's an income issue at the very least,
yes, if we are,
depending on EPF. And again, when we say 10% from the T20 who take out their money, let's say they all opt in. If we're worried about the T20 being able to retire or not, then we have much bigger issues to be getting into. Now, so we talked about account one earlier, Jeffrey. I want to talk about account two and some of the implications for about that. But first, a few messages. Folks, this is Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. And today I've been speaking with economist Dr. Jeffrey Williams, and we've been exploring the recently announced EPF restructuring and the introduction of a third account, Account Flexible. We're getting into what this means for Malaysia, the potential economic implications, and as well as what it means for retirement. I'm Roshan Kanasan. We'll be back in just a bit. So keep it here to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Beats, funk, mixtapes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're now listening to Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. And today we're talking about the recently announced EPF restructuring and the introduction of a third account, Account Flexible. We're getting into the implications of the potential economic implications, but also the basics of what this means to EPF contributors, as well as what it means to retirement as a whole. Now, if you just joined us, starting last week, announced last week, but starting from 11th of May, EPF's monthly contributions, will be broken down into three, 75% into what was account one, now known as account persaraan, 15% into what was account two, now account sejahtera, and 10% into a new third account, now known as account flexible. And there is an option to restructure your entire funding with EPF, but that one you got to look up. It's a bit complicated. But if you've never taken out money from EPF, if you opt in for that transfer, you should see your portfolio reflected into that 75, 15, 10% in your EPF account. Now, I've been speaking with Jeffrey Williams, economist, about all this and more. And earlier we talked about account one and some of the implications, some of the thoughts there, right, Jeffrey? And one of the things that maybe not talked about as much and we mentioned earlier was that account one has effectively gone from 70% to 75%. So that's the untouchable amount, the retirement savings. And EPF has also, over the last 50 years or so, evolved from more than just retirement to also life cycle needs as well. Now, account two, with that in mind, account two, now account sejahtera, comes down to 15% of monthly contributions, and the new account flexible takes up the remaining 10%. Effectively, this means there's less available for non-retirement needs in your EPF funding. But the use cases have opened up because account flexible is more open. What do you think of this move overall?
I think that it is giving people access to some of their savings. One of the biggest arguments that people have said is, look, it's my money. Mm. And certainly during the lockdown, that was one of the biggest arguments in favor of these withdrawals. I was always against the withdrawals, as mm-hmm. were almost every economist was against the withdrawal. But people said, look, I need it. I need to have it. And it is actually my money. And of course, in the end, that's true. But what you need to understand is that if you withdraw it at the time of your retirement, which could be as early as 55 or 60, you will have decades of life left, not just a few years. You know, my mum passed away last July. She was 89.
Wow.
So, and my father, who's still alive, is 86, 87 in June. And so this is the life expectancies that I and my siblings can expect. And what that means is that if I were to retire in October when I'm 55, I could have another 30 years of life.
And so and you another need to find a way to pay
entire
for that.
Life.
Yeah.
And what that means is, yes, you either, yes, you have to find a way of paying for that. And you either continue to work, which I don't want to do. Nobody wants to do this. Or you have to find another form of sustainable retirement income. And this is what EPF is trying to encourage people to understand, that the period in retirement will be long.
Yeah.
And some of the demands on your spending will be different. You will be spending more on medical, for sure. That I mean, that's just
health
and care assistance later on when you need somebody to help you in the home, for example. And you need to find a way of funding that. And unless the government is going to find a way of funding that on your behalf through a social protection system, a welfare system, then you're going to have to do it for yourself, mm-hmm. or you're going to have to rely on your family. And if you rely on your family, then they also have to find the resources for themselves. And then that means that you get intergenerational issues in terms of savings. And what all of that means is that you need really to look at how you want to fund it. If you're an EPF member and your income is good and you don't take time out of work for any reason, you're not unemployed or anything like that, and you are making consistent savings over 40 years of working, then you get to your target for mm-hmm. sure. But that doesn't happen for most people. In the course of that 40-year period, you will take time in work, time out of work. You might step out, set up your own business, step out, set up your family, whatever it might be. And then, of course, you want to dip in. You want to dip in for buying a house. You want to dip in for your education. And then suddenly you find that there's not the fund there. And although the dividend returns are good and compounded, they're very good. Even if you compound on a low amount, you're mm-hmm. going to wind up with a low amount.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. If you consistently save for the whole of your 40-year lifespan, yes, it works. If you don't do that, then it doesn't.
Yeah, I used to build models for retirement calculations, and EPF, I remember calculating if you earned 4,000 ringgit over a 30-year lifespan, working span, and you got 2 to 4% increments, you'd get somewhere in the million ringgit mark, if I had that correct. Again, this was about 2 years ago, so I don't remember the model itself. Mm. But that's, again, presuming that people earn 4,000 ringgit, presuming that you get consistent increments. And today we know that people are making 2,000, 2,500. We still have a minimum wage is 1,500 ringgit.
Well, the median salary for people in private sector contracts is 2,600 ringgit.
There you go. So we have an income issue, and EPF itself is not going to be able to manage that.
EPF cannot solve the income issue. And so long as your income is very low, the 24% contribution, your contribution of 11% and then 13% from your employer, is that 24% contribution is generous, but it's not enough if your income is low. Mm-hmm. And so fundamentally, the problem is low income.
Now, I understand that there was an editor's meeting, editor and commentators briefing from the EPF a week or so ago. What do you understand influence this change or this policy? Because it's not something that's come out of the blue. EPF Chief Strategic Officer from last year, Nori Sam Hussein, already mentioned this was in the works. And this has been a long time coming. They've spent time developing this. What's changed in the economy in Malaysia that's influenced this change?
I think that there are two main drivers of this. One is a very positive set of drivers, which is, as I mentioned earlier, EPF is really focusing on innovation and creativity and moving toward sustainable retirement income, not just on savings, but also investment to help people to understand what mm-hmm. we just discussed, that their retirement would be a longer period than they might expect, and that it has to be paid for. And that's very much more positive, and it's innovative, and there are a whole range of new accounts and products that they're introducing. And this is part of that. So it's very, very positive from that perspective. But then there is a defense strategy. And the defense strategy is that there are four withdrawal episodes. And once you've opened that door to withdrawals, it becomes a habit. Yeah. And it becomes a bad habit. And you only need another economic crisis. And the first thing that will someone will say is, EPF is the ATM.
Because we opened that Pandora's box already
yes,
once.
And you can't close it again. Because people will say, well, it worked in the past, so it will work in the future. But of course, it wouldn't work in the future because a very large number of people have nothing to take out.
Yeah.
And so what EPF are basically saying is that they're already putting in place the option for people to get early access to part of their savings, but to do that in a more structured way and to try to encourage people to understand that as part of their own personal choice and their own financial planning, and preferably to not do it.
Yeah, and you know, we'll talk a little bit about financial literacy later and personal responsibility, because we can't always be, you know, patriarchal nanny state forever, right? It can't be every time you empower the people that it's like, oh no, you shouldn't give them this option. Now, there are going to be consequences for sure, and we'll get into that a little later. Given that EPF expects 20 to 30 billion ringgit to be withdrawn following the restructuring, tell us a little bit of what you see as potential impacts from an economic perspective.
Well, this is an important aspect of the scheme. Mm-hmm. I mean, they haven't just introduced a reapportionment and said, from now on, your monthly contribution will be split 75, 15, and 10. They've said you can also, for this window, mm-hmm. this short period, you can also choose to take your total fund and allocate it across these three new funds in order to start, so you don't start from a zero balance in account three. And what that means is that potentially quite a lot of people will be able to move quite a lot of money into the immediate access account flexible. Now, in principle, this would be 10% of the total fund, which would be, in principle, 10% of a little over a trillion ringgit. But actually, it won't in practice be that amount, because a lot of that wouldn't be available. So the maximum amount is about 57 billion. But EPF have estimated, based on the behavioral withdrawals last time, the behavior of withdrawals last time, that it will be somewhere between 20 and 30 billion. Mm. Now, what that means is that if that is withdrawn, it will be spent. There will be a 20 to 30 billion ringgit of extra consumer spending.
So-called stimulus.
And it's a stimulus, yes. Yeah. It's exactly a stimulus. Mm-hmm. And it will have the same effect as the COVID stimulus. Mm-hmm. But of course, it will only be for the wealthy, mm-hmm. because those who are in lower income groups will basically
they have taken the money out
yes,
already.
They won't have anything to withdraw.
Yeah.
So what you would be doing is looking at the higher income groups and the higher wealth groups and asking them to take part of their money and push it into the economy by way of additional consumer spending stimulus. And that will help to push growth. So the government's target for growth this year is 4 to 5%. We are very cautious about that. Our view is it will be 3 to 4% like it was last year. But with that extra 20 to 30 billion, they have a better chance of getting 4%.
All right. So again, not taking a non-economic view, I really have to say again, only use your account flexible when you need to. Because there are a lot of things in life that, I mean, in the US, I think there was a study that most Americans don't have $1,000 yes. in their accounts. I think we have a similar study here where most Malaysians don't have 1,000 ringgit readily accessible. And things happen in life. Your car mm-hmm. breaks down, not under warranty. You may have particular medical things that are not covered immediately that you need, that money accessible very quickly. Think about account three as your emergency fund and not this discretionary
not
fund.
Not as a windfall.
Yeah,
this is the thing. In the past, the withdrawals under the lockdown period, it was a necessity. But then as we got into the third and the fourth, actually, many people were taking it out. It wasn't necessary for them to do it. And we know that. And they were quite open. I know people who said, I took it out and invested it in my small business, or I took it out and I bought a new car and all of this sort of thing. So we know that's true. But people should not view this as a windfall, because it's actually their money.
Yeah, it is a tale of three worlds in that sense. People have taken it out for, I know people who are asking me back then, so, oh, should I take out the money to go invest in this
gold?
Particular thing?
Yeah,
oh, my friend is telling me I should go do this. You know, for some people, maybe that may apply. I've said that with some amount of caution and conservatism there. But for most people, we don't know what we're doing when we're investing, especially if you've always relied on EPF your entire life. Mm-hmm. you're not immediately going to become a genius in investing overnight with this facility now made available. So use it for emergencies.
Yes, and because the chances are that you don't actually need it. That's the point. And so you might view it as an option, and it's a good option, but actually you could do without it. You don't need it in cash at the moment. So if that's the case, just leave it. Because you're going to get the same dividend. Yeah, it's not like saying you move it into account three and account three is going to have a lower dividend. It's the same dividend. And actually, that's good dividend. Mm, yeah. So you might as well leave it there.
Yeah, I think the CEO was cautious to say that for now, we don't know what about the future, but definitely as of now, they're saying the same dividend. And I'm thinking, if anything, the tagline for this should be break in case of emergency.
Yeah.
So that 20, 30 billion stimulus that we could see here, we are seeing the consumer is still very strong in the States. And now with the stock that the Fed's not going to even look at raising rates and lowering rates. And maybe we could see them raise if the inflation readings continue to be as hot as they have been in the last 2-3 months. Is there an inflationary concern here in Malaysia based on this potential stimulus?
I don't think so. Mm. Not really. I mean, there is a possibility, but I'm pretty confident about the inflation profile. Inflation is now pretty much close to normal historical headline inflation, at least. I mean, core inflation is a little bit elevated, but I don't think that there is a particular inflationary problem here. I mean, we're looking at the subsidy rationalization as well. But nonetheless, I think that the general trend for inflation is down. And the potential consumption, extra consumption from this, and also the subsidy rationalization, is not going to cause a spike in inflation. And certainly it's not going to require any form of policy response. There's no necessity for interest rate rises or anything like that.
We'll talk a little bit more about longer term implications to retirement and the economy, but also some the importance of financial literacy and the pension situation in a little bit. Folks, this is Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. And today I've been speaking with economist Dr. Jeffrey Williams, and we've been talking about EPF's recent restructuring and the introduction of Account Flexible, effectively Account 3. I'm Roshan Kanasen. We'll be back after a few messages, so keep it here to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Beautiful festive moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. I'm Roshan Kanasen, and today we're talking about EPF's recently announced restructuring and the introduction of a third account, Account Flexible. And we're getting into some of the implications and some of the rationale here with economist Dr. Jeffrey Williams. A quick recap, EPF will be restructuring their accounts. So three accounts here. The account one will now be known as Account Persaraan, and will be raised up to 75% of contributions. Account Sejahtera will replace account two and will become 15% of contributions. And the new account three, Account Flexible, will be 10% of contributions. And all this comes into effect from May 11th. And yes, there is an option to restructure your entire EPF portfolio to reflect that change. Just look that up online to kind of learn a little bit more about it, because it is a little complicated depending on your balance with EPF. Now, Jeffrey, earlier we talked about the breakdown, the potential implications here, the potential stimulus effect as well, and how the overall, there's only so much EPF can do from a retirement solving perspective. It is really an income situation. And when it comes to the good, the bad, the ugly of the restructuring of EPF, it really comes down to where you are and how much money you have left in EPF, because it is the EPF member is not a monolith. There are many different perspectives here. And really, there are multiple stories, but maybe a tale of three cities at this point, but could be more than that, depending on the profiles. Now, do you see, what are the longer term implications that you potentially see, whether economic or retirement basis, from these changes?
I think that this is really showing us that DPF is trying to be as innovative as possible, but it's revealing, along with the data that we mentioned before, that there's a limit to what can be done with EPF accounts. And in particular, you know, this observation that it really is only those in upper income groups and the higher wealth groups who have anything meaningful in the EPF accounts. And whilst EPF can be as innovative and creative as possible, and they are, I mean, they're being very innovative and creative, the simple fact of it is that there are millions of people who will not be able to benefit from anything that EPF does because either they're not members. 7 million people at least are not members. One third of the
working
population are not members. Or if they are members, their balances in their accounts are too small to make any difference. And what this is showing, I think, from a strategic perspective and economics perspective, is that we need to have a whole fresh look at retirement. There is a retirement crisis, and it's here now. It's as simple as that. You cannot say, oh, this is something in the future and, oh, we'll deal with it later on. It's here and it's now. And I think what's important is to see that actually EPF are putting it front and center and saying, well, it's on the agenda and we are starting and we are making the changes and the innovations. But you need to understand how limited it is. We can be the anchor of the system, but we cannot be the system as a whole. What this means is the government needs to look at very seriously the idea of a non-contributory pension scheme, because there are so many people whose incomes are so low that it's just not possible for them to make meaningful contributions from salary levels and income levels, which are at the general levels that we see now. It's just not meaningful. And what that means is that you need to have an aim for a universal basic pension. And then you need to look at what would that mean and how can we fund that and who would be eligible for that. Because without that, you cannot rely upon the two same old strategies of work longer and save more. I mean, we worked out that you would have to work after you had died in order to get to the threshold level. And you would have to save more than you earned. Mm. In order, if you're in your 40s or your 50s and you have nothing in your accounts, that is the basic truth of it. And you don't need to be an economist to understand that. You just need to know if you haven't got anything in your account and you've got 20 years left to save 240,000 ringgit, how are you going to do that, right? You have to save 12,000 a month, something like that. Sorry, 12,000 a year, something like that. And the fact is, it's just not possible for you to do that. So the government needs to look at how the pension crisis or how the pension issue in general can be addressed through a non-contributory scheme. And, you know, the only option we have on the table at the moment is the establishment of a super fund.
Talk to us a little bit about that. I do want to talk about financial literacy in a little bit. I do want to bring up some numbers, though, just to remind people. So EPF, in its appendix to its dividend report, always provides these numbers. So if you break it down by savings level group, the B40, 6.4 million members, has 11 billion ringgit in savings in total of the $1.1 trillion ringgit in assets that EPF has, which means that average savings is about 1,700 ringgit. The M40 has 6.4 million members as well. 180 billion of those assets belong to them. That's an average savings of 28,000 ringgit. And the T20, the 3.2 million of them, has just under 900 billion of the 1.1 trillion, so the majority of it, with average savings of just under 280,000 ringgit. So these are the numbers that we're talking about. This is the stratified, the different verticals here that are being impacted and what the EPF is really working with. So talk to us about the alternative that you were, the pension alternative, or I think you've referred to it as the super fund in the past as well.
Yes. The reason I call it a super fund is that it takes all of the current government-linked investment corporations and the development finance institutes. In other words, where has the government stashed all the money over the course of 60 years since the Medeca? Where is it all gone? And the answer is it's gone into multiple different institutions. At the time, these were very big and very significant. Khazanah National, for example, was always seen as an anchor sovereign wealth fund. But actually now it's very small. I mean, it's about 1/10 of the size of EPF.
Yeah.
And we have multiple different funds. And if you bring all of these funds together into a single fund and restructure the way that the fund is managed and restructure the strategic asset allocation, then you can be much more meaningful in terms of the development investment doesn't change. They're still government-owned development investment corporations. That doesn't change. But the return is then pooled. And then because you have a pooled return from a bigger fund, you can then ask the question, well, what can we use this for? And what could be better than for retirement? Mm-hmm. And they do this in Norway. This is what they did with their...
all their oil money.
All their oil money. They do it in Japan. It's not particularly oil money, but it's the fruits of their economic growth. Mm-hmm. They're doing it in Sarawak, mm-hmm. right? They're mm-hmm. establishing a new sovereign wealth fund. And where are they getting the model for their sovereign wealth fund? From Norway. Mm-hmm. And what are they doing with the returns on the sovereign wealth fund? One of the things is to ring fence it for social protection. And that's essentially the root of it. And we've estimated that it's perfectly possible for them to pool these funds and to deliver a good return that would pay at least part of the pension bill. If not all of it, then certainly part of it. And it's not a matter of giving people a particularly generous pension. It's just a matter of giving people enough for them to live on.
Basic income.
Basic income. Universal basic pension scheme or universal basic income scheme. Mm-hmm. And it's ring-fenced. And what that means is that nothing in particular changes in terms of the structure of the economy. You're not taking money out of the economy. You're actually putting more money into the economy. But what you are doing is taking it out of the responsibility of individuals who can't afford it and taking it out of the responsibility of the government. Because if you don't have an individual set of accounts, in the end, the government has to pay for that. And the government doesn't have the fiscal space either. So you have to take it out of the operational expenditures.
Jeffrey, a few more questions in a little bit, including how you hope that the introduction of flexible accounts will be used by EPF contributors, as well as a perspective on the public's reaction so far and policy. What kind of feedback should policymakers be taking? Because we have heard quite a bit come out about this, a lot of thoughts here. Folks, this is Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. And today I've been speaking with economist Dr. Jeffrey Williams, and we've been talking about the recently announced EPF restructuring with the introduction of Account 3 or the Account Flexible coming to play May 11th. I'm Roshan Kanasen. We'll be back after a few messages, so keep it here at BFM 89.9, the business station.
Better Finance Management, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. And today we're discussing the recently announced EPF restructuring and the introduction of Account Flexible with economist Dr. Jeffrey Williams. And as the promo a little while ago said, gave us a little bit of a framework and reminded us what we should be using that money for. Jeffrey, I do want to ask that question over to you. How might the introduction of the flexible account, how do you hope it will impact savings behaviors of EPF contributors?
I think that my hope is that it will help people to understand that they should be saving more into the account one mm-hmm. as much as possible, and that they really shouldn't be viewing this as an opportunity to withdraw. I mean, I'm not a financial planner, but financial literacy is very, very important. And they really do need to look at the idea that this is not a windfall given to you by the government. This is your money that you're taking out. It belongs to you for sure. But when you take it out, it's you who has to rebuild it in the end. It's not, the government is not going to rebuild your account back. It's not going to do that. So in the end, it's just a question of, as far as I see it, is I'm an EPF account holder as well. Mm-hmm. So my money will be split across three accounts. It will earn the same dividend across all three accounts. I will just leave it.
Yeah, even myself, I'm looking at it and thinking about whether I do want to opt in for that restructuring so that I have a little bit of flexibility should something happen. Right now, where there's no sign that there's going to be, they're not committing to long-term EPF dividends remaining the same, but right now, that's what they've said. So there needs to be a conscious effort here. That's why they've given us 4 months to think about this, about 2.5-3 months to think about it before you opt in. Don't make it a knee-jerk response, because if you opt in, you can't opt out, and they will restructure your account here. And if you don't trust yourself to be able to, especially if you've built up a large sum or a lump sum there over 20, 30 years, if you don't trust yourself to leave it there, then maybe don't opt in and then manage the contributions.
Yes, not opting in is probably a good option. It's good because the monthly contributions will automatically be split. You don't need to opt in to that. That will automatically happen. So your account three will start to accumulate.
Yeah.
But it will start to accumulate. If it starts to accumulate from zero, you will be less likely to go and less likely to go and take out, you know, 200 ringgit or something like that. You're not going to, and then eventually, hopefully, you will just forget about it, and it will accumulate quietly along with the other accounts, and then the temptation will have gone.
Actually, that's the best advice, right? Just forget about it and let it compound.
Yes.
Friends have been asking, so, can I opt out of the EPF account three contribution? And the answer is no, you can't.
No,
opt
you can't.
This is the system going forward.
You can
forward.
Opt in to top up the account flexible from the start, but you can't opt out of the allocations for the monthly.
Yeah,
from now onwards.
And I think there was a very specific mention of we are not a bank, so you can't just be withdrawing. You can't just be topping up to account three alone later on. You can't be like, oh, can I put 1,000 ringgit into my account three? No, if you voluntarily contribute 1,000 ringgit, 750 will go into your Persaraan, 150 will go into Sejahtera, and 100 ringgit will go into your account flexible. Financial literacy is really important here, Jeffrey. And there is always going to be this push and pull between how much the state should do versus how much personal responsibility individuals should have. And personal responsibility is not something you can ratchet from zero to one immediately. It's something that needs to be developed and learned. So talk to us about the importance of financial literacy here and what the policymakers should be doing in educating people about the restructuring.
I think the EPF is doing everything it can, and I think that they're really helpful. The information that's available tells you everything you need to know about it. But and of course, you can have an app on your phone. I have my app on my phone,
yes.
So you can always find out about what's going on. But there is, of course, in the end, there's a responsibility on each of us to go and find that information and to think about it and reflect upon it. EPF can only put it into the public domain and continue to remind us to, refresh ourselves on what it means up to the point where the end of the opt-in period.
Yeah.
That's the best that they can do. But I mean, I think they're doing their best, really.
And there is, to say the least, there's been plenty of feedback, public opinion. Towards the end of last week, Evening Edition obviously did a call in to listeners, and the messages show that either there are people who are strongly opposed to it, there are people who are appreciating of the facility, there are people who want to opt in from the monthly contributions being split into the third account altogether. So it's a bit of a mixed bag here. From your perspective, give us a sense of what you're seeing as the public's reaction, and ultimately how EPF policymakers should be reacting to this feedback.
I think economists have been very cautious. But then economists are just grumpy old men. So we would always say, you just got to, save it and forget it, and you can't take it out because you'll just have a good time, and we're against it. Just for those. But I was of that perspective. I was of that view when I first heard about it. But having listened to how EPF have developed the scheme, and based on the analysis of the data and the nudges that they're getting and the behavioral analysis that they're doing, I think that they put together a really very good solution to what is a quite a difficult situation for them. Because if they didn't put in this system, for sure, some politician will come along at some point in the future and say, right, let everyone take 10,000 out like they did in the past. So I think they're doing their best in that regard. As far as the general public is concerned, of course you would want to advise people to say, put the money into your retirement account and don't take it out. In fact, my retirement account in the United Kingdom is exactly that. The university superannuation scheme, I put the money in. I can't take it out until October when I'm 55. And that's it. And it's been sitting there. And I actually forgot I forgot that I had it. It was so, you know, it's so distant and so not available to me that I actually forgot. And now I found out how much is in it, and now I can retire. So in that sense, it worked. But that's a completely different scheme. That was a prohibitive scheme, which says you can't withdraw under any circumstances. And if the government wants to move toward that, they have to set up a different fund, you know, because EPF was never set up in that way. And you can have a contributory fund with no withdrawals, or you could have a non-contributory fund, like we mentioned before, which also has the same implication, where you pool the contribution and you pool the benefits in the end. Now, for the general public, in the end, it's their money. And I understand it when people say, look, it's my money and I want it. I understand that. I'm all for freedom of choice. It is your money, but it's also your retirement. So your retirement is going to come in the future. And you cannot rely upon someone coming to help you in the future. The government may not have the resources to come and help your pension in the future. Your family may not have the resources to come and help you in the future. And if you want to work and for the whole of your life and work until you die, then that's the prospect. But if you want to enjoy your retirement, then you need to be thinking about saving now.
Jeffrey, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. I really appreciate that. I think that's a perfect note to end this conversation on. Thank you for joining me in the studio.
It's my pleasure, always. I'm going to retire in October.
Folks, I've been speaking with economist Dr. Jeffrey Williams, and this has been Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. If you missed any part of this conversation, I highly encourage you to catch the podcast on our website at bfm.my or on the BFM app, which you should definitely download and keep on your phone. In fact, put it on your main screen, home screen. You can also find our shows, of course, on all the main podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, actually. Just look for Enterprise Explores. I'm Roshan Kanasan. Keep it here to BFM 89.9, the business station.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.